This is James R. Copeland, Director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute, and it's my pleasure to welcome Ken Klukowski, who's a fellow and senior legal analyst with the American Civil Rights Union and a legal contributor to Breitbart News. We're here today to talk about the Supreme Court's oral argument and the case called Arizona v. United States, the well-publicized Arizona immigration law case just heard before the Supreme Court. So welcome, Ken, to pointoflaw.com and the Manhattan Institute Center for Legal Policy.
Great to be with you, Jim. Thank you for having me.
So just at the outset, Ken, what exactly are we talking about with this case? First of all, what does this Arizona immigration law do or purport to do? And secondly, what's the legal challenge that's before the Supreme Court?
Well, Jim, at the outset, it's important to note a couple things. First of all, obviously the public policy issue that we're discussing is immigration, and that's also the political issue we're discussing as well. But that is not the legal issue. The legal issue, instead of immigration, is what's called preemption. See, the Supreme Court has repeatedly said and reaffirmed unanimously as recently as 1976 in the DeConis case that immigration is an exclusively federal power. It's vested solely in Congress, but that immigration consists of determining who can cross the international border in the terms and conditions of their stay, and on a related note, naturalization, how a foreigner who comes to this country later becomes an American citizen. That is not at all the issue here, because this Arizona law, just like the California law in the 1976 case that I just referenced, this Arizona law has to do with employment of illegal aliens if they are within the state of Arizona. It does not purport to authorize someone to enter the country or to kick someone out back over the border or to take a foreigner and make them an American. So this is not an immigration and naturalization case. Instead, the issue is, as I said, preemption, that being wherever under the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution in Article 6, where federal law and state law conflict, federal law wins so long as that federal law is constitutional. So the issue here becomes, after that 1976 Supreme Court case, the DeConis case, Congress passed a large statute dealing with how we deal with illegal aliens in this country seeking to work. That was a 1986 statute that goes by the acronym IRCA. And the question is whether IRCA and a later law that goes by the abbreviation IRERA, whether there are provisions in those federal laws that conflict with Arizona's new law, SB 1070. If so, then federal law would trump. So the issue before the Supreme Court is that there are four specific provisions of SB 1070. Many more were challenged, but the lower court said those other provisions were okay. Of these four remaining provisions that the Ninth Circuit Appeals Court said was preempted by federal law, that's what the justices looked at today. They took the federal statutes, set the state provisions alongside, and tried to figure out if they could coexist, or instead if they were in conflict.
So what exactly do these four provisions do, at least in relevant part, relevant to the challenge? And then what is the federal government's claim? What is the federal government's position as to how these provisions are supposed to conflict with the federal law?
Sure, and I'll try. I want to add this lawsuit gets rather deep into the weeds. There's a lot of technical points involved, and so I'll try to avoid getting lost in the minutiae in that regard. But I have to tell you, I think a lot of the media commentary on this has glossed over some important points. Some of them have completely mistaken it. Some are even misreporting that this case is about whether Arizona's SB 1070 is unconstitutional. There is no constitutional challenge in this case. Instead, it's in a much more technical area of law. The four challenged provisions are, first of all, in the event that an Arizona law enforcement officer has a lawful stop with an individual, they pull them over for speeding or for reckless driving or anything else that otherwise empowers a law enforcement officer to stop a person, that while they have them, if they have a reasonable belief that the person might be in this country illegally. And if that reasonable belief does not consider their apparent race, if there are other things about them other than skin color, then the Arizona officer is required to check with the federal government, because federal law sets up a hotline that any state agency can use to check the immigration status of someone who might be in this country illegally. That's a system Congress set up a long time ago. This section in Arizona law, in SB 1070, requires them to use it. Another thing is that it makes it, under federal law, it is a crime for a foreigner, with certain narrow exceptions. It's a crime, a federal crime, for a foreigner not to carry on their person at all times documentation that states they are authorized to be in the United States, whether that's a passport or a visa or whatever. Arizona takes that federal crime and also makes it a state crime. Beyond that, Arizona also makes it a crime for an illegal alien to seek employment, to solicit employment, to try to get a job. And finally, fourth, every state has certain items where a police officer can arrest you without a warrant. That's largely an issue of state law, subject to certain constraints by the U.S. Constitution. The section of SB 1070, the fourth one, adds a new type of warrantless arrest authority, and that is that if they have a reasonable belief that a person has committed a crime that renders them removable, deportable from the United States, that they have authority to arrest that person for it without a warrant. Those are the four issues that were argued before the court today.
Interesting. Now, in terms of this sort of inquiry, detention, sort of having your cards questioned, as I read the oral argument transcript, it looked to me like some of the justices had concerns in a couple of respects. First, you were hearing questions about how long can they detain these folks. In other words, Justice Sotomayor was particularly on this line of questioning. Sure, you could ask them a question or maybe detain them, but you know, what's to prevent them from keeping people detained for a long time? And sort of the second line of questioning was saying, what if someone was a U.S. citizen who's not required to carry ID or doesn't have an ID on them that they can check through this system? What's to protect that U.S. citizen from being caught up and ensnared in this law? What's your reaction to those sorts of questions?
Two-part reaction. First of all, Justice Kennedy really focused on that issue. He said, for example, could they keep you for 2 weeks while they are checking your immigration status? I think the lawyer for Arizona, Paul Clement, did a good job of pointing out that normally, that check can be done in 10 minutes. So it's something that takes place, is supposed to take place very quickly. It's one of the reasons that Congress created a federal hotline that states can use in that regard. But the second point is actually more important. That would have nothing to do with immigration. That would instead be a question about whether this law violates the Fourth Amendment. The federal government has not brought a Fourth Amendment challenge, so therefore they cannot even raise that argument, and the court cannot consider that argument in this case. If they want to raise that, then another lawsuit needs to be brought, but that was not part of this lawsuit.
Interesting. And similarly, what about the situation they were talking about? You're a New Mexico resident. Your ID doesn't show up in the federal system. Can they grab you as a New Mexico resident?
Well, that, of course, becomes an issue under the current state of federal law. Let's set aside Arizona law for a moment there. U.S. citizens are not required to carry documentation with us. So what happens in, let's take a state where this is just not at all an issue. If federal agents, and let's take state law enforcement out of this entirely. Let's say an ICE agent, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, let's say an ICE agent apprehends a New Mexico driver. So there's no New Mexico law at issue. There's no Arizona law at issue. That federal agent is going to be in the exact same situation. If that New Mexico resident is, in fact, an American citizen, he's not required to carry any documentation on him. So that presents a conundrum, I think, in terms of the current state of the law, but it has nothing to do with Arizona's law. It is instead an issue of the federal law that could apply in all 50 states.
So looking at the federal government's position here, what exactly is it about? I mean, it sounds like for the most part, at least, and these provisions, you know, you could take them all separately. The Arizona's just taking the federal government's rule, the federal law, as a backstop and then enforcing the federal law themselves. How's that supposed to be in conflict with the federal law?
Well, if in fact that's the case, as I believe it is true, then it's not a conflict. The issue becomes the Supreme Court has already held in previous cases that states possess concurrent jurisdiction, meaning they also have authority to enforce these laws. Now, in terms of whether to prosecute under these laws, that's a determination that's made by the Justice Department. But again, there's no enforcement in that regard in SB 1070. For example, the part that says checking immigration status, it would be an Arizona policeman calling the federal government and saying, hey, I've found this person. Are they here illegally? If the federal government says yes, then the Arizona police officer, okay, what do you want me to do with him? You know, the Arizona policeman does not have authority to deport him. He doesn't have authority to jail him for it. If the federal government says we're not going to do anything with him, then eventually that person is going to be released. What you stated is the position of Arizona. It is that pursuant to standing Supreme Court precedent from previous cases, we have taken the federal requirements. We have kept our requirements as mirror images of that federal requirement, and we are just exercising the concurrent jurisdiction, the simultaneous authority that the Supreme Court has already said that we have. The federal government's objection, Jim, is that they say how we treat a foreign citizen, whether they're here legally or not, has a direct impact on American foreign policy. It impacts our State Department, our president, our ability to conduct diplomacy with those other countries. Therefore, it is an issue of exclusively federal concern, and what Arizona is doing here by burning up our phone lines, calling us, asking about these people. Of course, if it's burning up the phone lines, you have to ask why Congress created this hotline if they don't want the states to use it. But nonetheless, the federal government's position is that Arizona is, in essence, forcing the federal government's hands by diverting federal enforcement resources to respond to Arizona's lead when it implements SB 1070.
Interesting. And the other sort of rub there, as I was reading the transcript, seems to be about this employment rule. Because when Congress set up the law you talked about in 1986, they put in enforcement mechanisms for employers, but not for employees. And I, as I read it, I think the government's basically trying to say that impliedly preempts an enforcement mechanism against the employees, which is what Arizona is trying to do. Is that correct?
That is correct. And in Chief Justice John Roberts express skepticism on that as well, because the issue here is not what the justices think is good policy or bad policy. The issue is what has Congress done through federal law, and is any aspect of the challenge parts of Arizona's law in conflict with that federal law? I think that of the four provisions, I think that one has a bit of an uphill battle in terms of getting to five votes to be upheld before the current court. On that provision, you see, in the lower court, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, two of the provisions were held to be preempted by federal law in a 2-1 split decision. Two other provisions were held by all three judges, two of them liberals and one of them conservative, to be provisions that were being preempted by Congress's federal law. That is one of the provisions, one of the two provisions, that all three of the judges in the lower court said was in conflict with federal law. So I think it would be an uphill battle for Arizona to get five votes to save that one from the way argument was playing out today.
Well, on that note, I think we've sort of established, I think, that you think that what the court should do is uphold the statute, but tell me if I'm wrong there, and then finally tell me what you think the court is going to do.
Well, I think two of the provisions of the statute, the alerting of federal authorities are inquiring with federal authorities regarding immigration status, and also the warrantless arrest authority. Those provisions fall within I think, pretty well within what we refer to as police power, which is an inherent authority that all states possess to make laws for public health, public safety, social welfare, and personal responsibility and morality. Those are the two, I believe, that the one judge in the Ninth Circuit voted to say was okay. Those, I think, there's a good chance, a real solid chance, you might be able to get to 5 votes to uphold those, and I think that would be correct. The other two provisions, making it a state crime not to have the federally required registration documents on you, and also the provision making it a crime for an illegal alien to solicit work, those, I think, face an uphill battle, and I think that those are a much closer call regarding current federal law. Again, not saying that federal law, to the contrary, if it is to the contrary, not saying it's a good idea, just saying that's the judgment that Congress has made, and so the way to change that would be Congress amending the law. Courts do not have the discretion to decide whether or not Congress's law is a good one. They just, so long as it's constitutional, they need to uphold it against any contrary state law.
Fascinating. Well, the one thing I guess I could say with confidence is that of the one justice who didn't speak, typically in the oral argument, Justice Thomas is not going to find any implied preemption here, because I know from other cases that he doesn't believe in the doctrine.
But that's right, Justice Clarence Thomas, and I agree with him on this, that implied preemption, I think, is an unnecessary slap in the face to the sovereignty of the 50 states. If Congress has authority to act, it can always pass a law that trumps the states. Again, if it's within the Constitution's grants of authority to the federal government, right. Where there is no express preemption, I think implied preemption is problematic. Why do we need to read Congress's mind when they can just pass a law to make clear that they want to overcome the state? So I think, Justice Thomas, you're probably right, could vote to uphold all 4 along those lines.
Well, it depends,
but that's
if he
a different
sees
question from whether we can get to 5 votes.
It depends if he sees anything express or not. I just wanted to throw that out there, because people read these tea leaves and there's one justice not speaking, but we kind of know what he thinks about, at least in terms of the implied preemption.
That's right. If he finds that there's anything explicit in federal law that is in tension with Arizona, then he could say it's preempted, that it has nothing to do with the idea of implied preemption.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Again, this is James R. Copeland, the director of the Center for Legal Policy at the Manhattan Institute. It's been my pleasure to welcome with us Ken Klukowski, a fellow and analyst with the American Civil Rights Union and a contributor to Breitbart News. You can catch other podcasts on this topic and many other legal topics at our Manhattan Institute website, manhattan-institute.org, or at our legal web magazine, pointoflaw.com. Thanks so much, Ken.
Thank you.